Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Today we're talking about the vulnerabilities of the U.S. power grid with Thomas Overby, who is Fox Family Professor in Electrical and Computer Engineering at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. A member of the National Academy of Engineering, Professor Overby is an expert on power system operations, visualization, and cybersecurity. So thanks for talking with us this morning, Tom. Can you start out by giving us a real short description of what is the U.S. power grid?
Well, the U.S. power grid actually consists, for the most part, of three large interconnected systems. Here in Illinois, we're part of what's called the Eastern Interconnect, which spans the eastern part of North America. It really should be called the U.S.-Canadian power grid because we're definitely interconnected with Canada. So what I like to tell the students is if you're an electron and you got in a wall outlet here in Illinois, you could actually get pretty much anywhere east of the Rocky Mountains by an interconnected grid. The second major grid is the Western grid, and that covers most of North America, kind of from Denver to the west, and it includes a little bit of Baja California. And then there's actually a power grid that's separate that covers most of Texas. So Texas, being the Lone Star State, likes to have their own power grid.
And are they all interconnected in some way between the three?
They operate what we call asynchronous. So they're all 60 hertz, and they're operating at the same frequency, but this frequency of the grid is never exactly the same in the three interconnects, so you can't directly interconnect them. In order to transfer power between them, we need to take it from alternating current, AC, convert it into DC, and then invert it back into AC. There's really not a lot of capacity to move electricity between the three grids. They're almost autonomous.
You were quoted recently in Science about the threat to the power grid from coronal mass ejections, CMEs. Can you help us understand what those are and what risk they pose to the power grid?
Right. What we call in the power grid community high-impact, low-frequency events. They're events that, if they were to occur, they could have a very high impact on the grid, but thankfully, they're very unlikely to occur. So they might occur once every 50, 60 years. A corona mass ejection from the sun is a naturally occurring event on the sun, and it sends charged particles towards the Earth, and those charged particles interact with the Earth's magnetic field, and they cause what we call a geomagnetic disturbance, a GMD. A GMD then induces low frequency, what we call DC currents in the grid, and that causes problems with our transformers that can cause overheating and could permanently damage the transformers. So it is a significant concern. Large GMDs are very rare. We had one that was a moderate one in 1989 that actually blacked out the province of Quebec. There were larger storms in 1859 and 1921 that if one of those storms were to occur today, it could cause problems for the grid.
Is there a way to defend against them?
Well, we as the power industry are taking this threat very seriously, and we're working on ways to reduce the risk to the grid. Some of that is better sensing, you know, sensing currents that are caused by small GMDs in the grid so we can better understand them. There are devices that we can install called transformer neutral blocking devices that actually block the currents from going from the power grid into the ground or from the ground into the grid. They are a little controversial because they're kind of expensive and we're not sure how well they'll work.
One thing I've heard about is reports of physical attacks on power substations, particularly in California. Have you heard anything about those events?
The one that you're referring to is called the Metcalf incident, and that was where some people, and as far as I know, we don't know who did it, but they shot up a 500 kV substation out by San Jose. And what was concerning about the Metcalf incident is evidently the people cut the communication lines beforehand, and they caused quite a bit of damage to some transformers out there. So why they did that, I don't know. if anybody knows, they're not publicly releasing it.
But is it possible to do serious damage with small weapons, with portable weapons?
I'm not a weapons expert, but as I understand it, if you have a sufficiently high caliber gun, you can do damage to high voltage transformers, and there's no secret about that. That's well known, and we're working to protect the transformers and to minimize the risk to the transformers.
Is it the case that the transformers themselves are custom designed devices that aren't sort of off the shelf and in stock, so that if there's damage, it may be hard to replace them?
Right, and this is well known that the transformers have a lead time in getting replaced. Utilities are increasingly having spare transformers on hand, and we have increased the manufacturing capacity in North America for high voltage transformers. So we can nowadays better replace the transformers. But one of the concerns in an event like a GMD is some people are concerned that it could damage a large number of high voltage transformers. The concern isn't that we lose one or two transformers, because that occurs naturally. The concern is if we were to lose a whole large number of transformers due to overheating, such as during a GMD.
So then it wouldn't be a matter of replacing one or two, but maybe replacing a lot of them, I assume.
Right, it would be a matter of replacing a lot of them.
Yeah. What happens when one of these devices is damaged? Is the power rerouted, and is that automatic?
Right. If we were to lose one transformer, we don't like to say it's rerouted as though somebody's actively rerouting it. For the most part, the flows of power on the grid are only controlled indirectly. It's just an electrical circuit. So if you take one device out, the electrons will naturally redistribute themselves. So the loss of one or two high voltage transformers is, you know, it's not an everyday occurrence, but it's not unusual. And we designed the grid to work with the loss of one or two devices.
So that's an automatic. It's not something that somebody has to flick a switch to do rerouting.
Right. Nobody has to flip a switch. The standard way the grid is protected, such as during a thunderstorm when you might have lightning, is we have devices called electrical relays, and those relays are constantly sensing the grid, and they sense if there was a fault on a transmission line, such as due to a lightning strike. The relays will open up devices called circuit breakers, which de-energize the transmission line. That takes place in literally a blink of an eye. So when people see during a storm, they see their lights blink. That blinking of the lights was caused by the fault on the system, such as due to a lightning strike. The relay's taking it out in a 20th of a second. And once the fault is removed, for the most part, the lights come back to close to where they were before. And then in several seconds, the standard procedure is to try to put that transmission line back into service, and that occurs automatically. In a lightning strike, there's usually no permanent damage. The line goes back, and the grid is restored to where it was before. If there's some cause for the line to be out, like maybe it contacted a tree, or we just had a tornado here in central Illinois that it could have taken down a transmission line, then the relays would try to reclose, they'd sense the fault, and then they'd lock out, and that line would be out of service until it's repaired.
So then you need a physical repair.
Right. If there's damage, like due to, obviously, if a tornado takes down some towers, then you need to physically repair it. If there's a tree contact and the tree's still there and it faults into the tree a couple times, you would send a crew out and they would remove the tree and things would go back to normal. I should say that for most outages that people experience, they're caused by issues in the lower voltage portion of the grid, what we call the distribution system, the wires that you see running in the neighborhoods. They're smaller events, like we've lost power at my house a number of times because squirrels jump between the wires and cause problems. But those aren't the ones that we're most concerned about from grid vulnerability point of view. We're more concerned about the large-scale outages that could affect a lot of people for a long time.
I understand that your research now is substantially focused on cyber threats. Can you explain the nature of those threats and whether or not we're actually experiencing them now?
Well, I do research in power grid cybersecurity vulnerability and understanding the threat and working to better protect the grid. certainly electric utilities, like just about every other company, are under increasing cyber attacks. And those attacks could be coming from the run-of-the-mill hacker up to nation states probing to see vulnerabilities in the grid.
Is your research focused on trying to detect or to defend, or what directions are we going?
Well, we're working, and it's certainly not just me. There's lots of people working in this area, but it's all of the above. We're looking to detect the events that go on, figuring out ways to better secure the system, recognizing that we're never going to be 100% secure, so we have to figure out ways to operate the grid even though there might be cyber vulnerabilities. So one of the things you want to do and if somebody attacks the grid is to prevent them from doing large-scale damage.
To try to circumscribe the damage. Is there a way to block the attacks entirely? That is to somehow get off the public system, get off the internet, if you will.
Well, there's certainly trade-offs in that. I would say the electric power industry is taking cybersecurity very seriously. And at the same time, we're increasing the number of devices that are, let's say, cyber-enabled. It used to be very little, of course, was cyber-enabled. We used to have electromechanical relays. Now we've got digital relays, and a lot of times those digital relays are communicating via systems that could potentially be hacked. We're now adding much more control to the grid, and that control goes all the way down to potential access by homeowners and their meters and things like that. So there's lots of potential vulnerabilities on the grid. For example, if you've got a capacitor bank that it's very convenient to communicate with that wirelessly, then you've got a security vulnerability. But as long as somebody can just attack a single capacitor bank, say, one of the devices that sits on a pole in a neighborhood, it's not a major cyber concern. What we're concerned about is somebody being able to get into a control center and open up all the breakers that are associated with a large city.
So I understand that you and your colleagues were recently awarded a large grant from DARPA to build a test bed to test security tools. Is that the direction you're talking about here?
Right. We did get a grant from DARPA, and we're working on setting up a test bed that other researchers can use to test various security vulnerabilities and security solutions for the power grid. So we're going to be setting up a simulation, if it were, that represents a model of the electric grid and also a model of the control and communication hardware associated with the grid. And then we can test security vulnerabilities and security solutions on that.
And that'll be open to other researchers from around the nation?
Right. It'll be open to other researchers around the nation.
Is the test bed a computer simulation or a physical simulation or an integration of the two?
It's an integration of the two. We're going to have computer simulations of the power grid itself because, it's of course, you can't build a large-scale interconnected electric grid. So we use simulations to represent the grid itself, but then the simulation will be talking to actual hardware that is identical to the devices that are being deployed in actual utility systems.
So will other researchers be able to access and utilize the test bed remotely?
Yes.
And when will that come online?
Well, I believe it's a 5-year project, so it's something that we're just starting on, and it should be coming online in pieces.
It seems, as you describe it, and as I think all of us experience, we're increasingly dependent on the power grid for almost everything we do, from communications to supplying ourselves with food to mobility. Should we all worry about the vulnerability of this dominantly electric society?
If I had to give advice to people, and, you know, blanket advice does not apply to everyone, but it's pretty likely that we will experience some sort of power grid outage. For example, here in the Midwest, we haven't had a large-scale ice storm in Illinois for quite a while, but we could have a large-scale ice storm that could take down a lot of our transmission system and our local distribution system, so people could be out of power for 10 days. So the more people can prepare for that, the better. It's not saying that those of us who work in the electric power industry aren't very concerned about increasing reliability. It's just that we know that a perfect grid is not possible. So yes, the more people can have access to backup generators, and that doesn't work for everyone, but it works for some. And I'll say at my house, we have a backup generator because when the squirrels get in the or in the distribution lines and I lose power, our backup generator turns on.
So that sounds like it may be a fairly costly solution for some, but it would be a solution for those who are in serious need.
Right. It is a costly solution. Not everyone can have a backup generator. You know, perhaps you live in an apartment and a backup generator doesn't work. But what we would like to get out to the community as much as possible, we want to back up our critical infrastructure. For example, the places that supply water, the sewage treatment plants, you want to have them have thought through what would we do if the grid went down for 10 days, and they should have backup generation and enough fuel to run for a couple weeks.
It sounds, the way you're describing the situation, like you're more concerned about, in the near term at least, natural threats as opposed to cyber threats. Is that a fair description?
Well, I am concerned about all sorts of threats, and I think we've got a wonderfully reliable electric grid, but people should realize that, you know, we are increasingly dependent on electricity, and it can fail. And we're trying very hard as an electric utility industry to make the grid as reliable as possible. But there are these potential large-scale vulnerabilities. We had a tornado here in central Illinois. If we had had a large set of tornadoes like they had down south a few years ago, that could have taken out a lot of transmission lines, and we might be sitting in the dark now. So the more people can be prepared individually, and everybody has to work through what can they do on their budget to be prepared for the event that the power might be out for a while.
So it sounds like we're all in this together, and it's not just a matter of us relying on the people who manage the power grid, but we need to manage our own consumption and availability of power.
Well, right. I would like to say, yes, it's a reliable grid, and we hope to keep it very reliable, but, you know, you want to be prepared for emergencies. And here in this part of the country, loss of power for 10 days from an ice storm is possible.
It's a possibility.
Whether a large-scale GMD could take down the grid for much longer, the honest answer is we don't know. How much risk we have on a cyber attack, the answer is we don't know. And I should say a lot of the cyber vulnerabilities of the grid are classified and they don't get to people like myself. So I don't know the extent of the potential damage to the grid from a cyber intrusion. But we're trying to minimize it, and we're doing the research to minimize it. And, you know, the fact that DARPA, which comes out of the Defense Department, is funding test beds means they're concerned. So we are concerned, and we are trying to make the grid more secure.
So it's comforting, I think, for all of us to know that you and your colleagues are working on it, and we need also to pay attention to our own needs and take care of ourselves to some degree. Professor Overby, I really appreciate your sharing your insights into this interesting problem with us today. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.